Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds' Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
And welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. I'm Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And on today's episode, we're talking with Katie Zhao, the author of The Dragon Warrior and The Fallen Hero, and the upcoming How We Fall Apart.
Yeah, so we had a lot of fun talking to Katie about Chinese mythology, how she got started with writing, and just the importance of representation on the page.
Yeah, it's really cool to talk to someone who's writing books, especially for younger readers, because as we've all mentioned before, these are all books and stories that we wish we had when we were growing up. And I'm not ashamed to say that I had a lot of fun reading Katie's books. It's jam-packed with great Easter eggs for those of us who are familiar with Chinese mythology and folklore, as well as a lot of subtle nods to Asian American culture. It's really a lot of fun. And you know, for those of you looking for things to give to the young readers in your life, this is definitely highly recommended from my end.
And with that said, we're going to move on to the interview.
Yeah, enjoy. Hi, Katie. Welcome to the podcast. We're happy that you can join us today.
Hi, Marvin.
Congratulations on the release of your second book, The Fallen Hero. It's the second book of your series that started with The Dragon Warrior that came out last month. So, congratulations on that.
Thank you so much.
So just to start off, I know you're from Michigan, but did you grow up there your whole life?
Yes, I grew up in Michigan. So I was born in Flint. And then I moved to another area in the Metro Detroit area. And I grew up in Michigan. I went to school at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. So then I spent another 4 years of my life in Michigan. And then in 2019, I actually moved to New York City for a little bit over a year. And then like back in the end of May, early June-ish, like when I realized this pandemic isn't going to be over anytime soon, I moved back to Michigan. So I am back home with my family.
Yeah, I don't really know much about like the Asian American community in Michigan. I know that there's a pretty good like Korean adoptee population there, but like I'm not so sure about like the Asian American community there. So did you grow up around a lot of Asian Americans?
So I think Southeast Michigan, which is where I live, has one of the bigger Asian populations, but like it's still absolutely nothing compared to like East Coast or West Coast. Like my school was probably 5 to 10% Asian. But I did like grow up going to Chinese school, so that was nice. I don't know about Korean adoptees, but the area where I grew up actually has a big Japanese American population.
Because
I mean, it's like Detroit is like the Motor City, right? So like I think a lot of them would like their families would come from Japan to work at you know, an American automotive company for like maybe 1 to 3 years or something. And then it was really sad for me because I'd make friends with them and then they would move back. But yeah, that's like probably like the extent of the Asian American community around here. It was a real shock for me moving to New York and just being so overwhelmed by all the Asians everywhere and like Asians who are like like really Americanized, but then Asians who are also like kind of fresh off the boat.
Yeah, I mean, if you head to Chinatown, it's, you know, a totally different world.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I heard through the grapevine that you're a pretty well-known Wattpad author. So I am guessing that you have been writing since at least high school, probably younger, right?
Yeah. Wait, first of all, what grapevine was this?
It was just like floating around book blogs. So
oh,
yeah,
I okay. Like... Interesting. I have talked about
have
it.
Have you dug up something dark?
Before. I've talked a little bit too much about it. I like to joke that like I want to like block out that part of my memory, but no, Wattpad was like I have my thoughts on that website, but it was a good starting block for me to like really get used to like getting like writing a novel length story, and also like because it's so interactive, I could get like reader comments on every chapter I uploaded. So that was like really encouraging. And for me, when I started writing novels on Wattpad, I was in high school, so you know I was still just like learning how to write a novel. So like honestly, other writers and readers' encouragement meant the world to me back then. But yeah, I have been writing for a very long time. I started out writing short stories when I was like 7 or 8 years old. I just remember my teacher gave all of us an assignment to write a short story, and like I still remember that moment very vividly. I like was writing the story and I was like, this is so much fun. I don't think I've, you know, had so much fun doing anything yet before. But I was still very young, so I didn't know this is what I would want to do for the rest of my life. But then my teacher also like praised me and was like, oh, this is like such a great short story, which is probably what she said to everybody back then. But I thought I was like the greatest writer ever. So
confidence is key, right?
In this industry, it really is everything, but not like being overly confident, just like, you know, just having enough confidence to continue like pushing through rejections and putting yourself out there, I think is definitely key. But yeah, and after a very long writing journey, I'm publishing novels now.
Yeah. Do you remember what short story got you that key praise?
I remember we were doing a unit on legends and myths. I don't remember what, like I think it was just like a different American legends, like Bigfoot or I'm blanking now, but you know, like the kind of story I'm talking about. And I wrote about a river, but I don't remember like what river now. But I just like am surprised that I like still remember that moment so vividly, because it's been like many, many years. But I think that was like a key moment for me as a writer.
Did you ever participate in NaNoWriMo? I'm asking this because November is just around the corner.
I'm so glad you asked. So in high school, I would like say, I'm going to do NaNo, and then just like I wouldn't have time, or I just like wouldn't finish whatever book I was working on. But The Dragon Warrior was actually my NaNo 2017 novel, and I ended up rewriting that very bad NaNo draft like 2 or 3 times after. But it was still like the first time I sat down and told myself, I'm going to do NaNo. I'm going to write this novel that's been in my head, and like I'm not gonna like, you know, let myself slack off. So that was exciting. And then How We Fall Apart, which is my young adult debut coming out August of next year, was my NaNo 2018 novel. So I didn't do NaNo in 2019 because I was all NaNoed out, but I'm hoping to do NaNo this year. We'll see, like, depending on if I have too many author responsibilities on my plate. But so far, I'm looking ahead to November, and I'm like purposely not taking on like too many extra things right now to like hopefully make room in my schedule for another NaNo attempt.
Wow.
That's so
cool.
For
all you aspiring authors out there, this is how you put in the work.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so cool that like Dragon Warrior was a NaNo draft, because I feel like a lot of authors, they who do nano, their first manuscript is just utter crap and they just put it in the drawer. And that's just, you know, part of the writing process. You just have to like get a drawer novel out there to actually start on a real novel. So that's really interesting that that Dragon Warrior was a nano project.
It was total crap, that first draft, but like I still knew I had something there. So like I had to rewrite it, but eventually I got it to be something decent, I hope.
Yeah. So the Dragon Warrior, that was your debut novel, right?
Yes.
Can you share about how it got there from a NaNoWriMo project to actually getting published?
Sure. So it was a very long and grueling process, but it was, I think writing the Dragon Warrior was the first time that I wrote a novel and felt like there's something here and I want to do whatever I can to like keep rewriting it until it's like something I can query, because I'd written other novels before, but like I'd never truly learned how to revise. Like I would do like, you know, like little lazy edits here and there, like clean up the grammar or whatever, but that wasn't what, that's not like the level of work that it really takes to write something that I think, you know, is good or publishing quality, at least for me, because I don't like to like outline that heavily. I'd say I'm between like a plotter and a pantser, but leaning more toward pantser. So I totally pantsed the crap out of the Dragon Warrior in Nano 2017. And I actually made my sister read the whole draft, bless her. And she came back to me and said very bluntly, like, this is very bad. and I was like so shook. I was like, okay, I can't be that bad. But then like I let her feedback like simmer my mind, and she gave me other feedback too, but I like let it simmer my mind, and then I realized, oh, she's right, like this whole thing needs to be rewritten. And then I spent like the better part of December and January rewriting this draft, and I ended up like totally overhauling it like at least one or two more times. And then after that, like when I was finally like sort of happy with the draft, like I started doing like little line level edits, like grammar, spelling, all that good stuff. And then this was also the part of the process where I learned how to get critique partners, because before when I wrote my novels, it was just like I would just get like surface level comments from Wattpad readers. And like, you know, they would just say like, this is great, please upload the next chapter. But that's not going to help me like get the level of feedback I need to understand how to improve my story. So I found my critique partners on Twitter, and they're still some of like my closest writer friends today. And we just like traded manuscripts, and like it was really their feedback that helped me reach, you know, the true heart of the Dragon Warrior and to help me shape it into something that wasn't complete trash. And then starting in the beginning of January of 2018, I finally like felt like this book is ready to query. I think like toward the end of the month or something, I started querying and querying agents. And I was very lucky that in my first round of querying, I pitched my current agent, Penny Moore. And I had a feeling that she would like it, because like I'd been following her Twitter for a while and just like seeing the kinds of stories that she likes and the authors that she represents. Back then, Akemi Dawn-Bowman was like, I think her big name author. So, and I loved Akemi's writing, and was like, okay, well, she seems to like be really passionate about representing Asian authors, so I'm going to pitch her. And I did, and she loved The Dragon Warrior, and she signed me in February of 2018. And then Penny and I revised The Dragon Warrior for like a few weeks, I think, and then we went on sub very quickly, and very quickly sold to Bloomsbury in March of that year. So this was like a whirlwind for somebody who had been writing her novels with like, you know, no agent or anything in sight for so long. Like this, The Dragon Warrior was not the first novel I queried. I think it was the fourth novel I queried. But like I said before, the novels that I wrote before the Dragon Warrior, I didn't know how to like really rewrite and revise yet. So they ended up going nowhere. But when I really put in like the work and, you know, got a lot of feedback from great writers, I was able to write something that an agent loved and then an editor loved. And so we quickly sold it. And now it's October 2020 and the Dragon Warrior and the Fallen Hero are both out.
That's awesome. So you were doing all this while also like working, right?
Yeah. So in 2017, when I first got the idea for the Dragon Warrior and started drafting it, I was in my like, it was like my fourth year of school. So I technically graduated from U of M in 2017. After 3 years, I graduated with an English major. But then my parents really wanted me to do accounting. And so I did a 1 year master's of accounting program at U of M in 2018. And so like it was like around that time, you know, I was like about to start the program and everything where I was like really frantically writing. And then, I mean, during that year, it was like mostly my school year where I was like, you know, I knew I didn't want to do accounting and I knew that writing was what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So, like it was really during that grad year that I just like decided I was going to put in all the work that I could into this book. And it was really weird because I would go to like my accounting lectures and like everyone would be like so into accounting and stuff. And I would just be like daydreaming and like brainstorming for my novel and then like writing it in the evenings. I just felt like I was like living two lives basically. And then I actually landed a full-time job at KPMG in like right after I graduated. So I realized like, you know, that summer between graduating and starting my full-time job that like this is going to be my last summer where I can like finally write. And so I just like wrote a lot. That was when I wrote my young adult. And in 2018, when I started my full-time job, I was, you know, still doing edits for the Dragon Warrior. And I'd also like, I was also like trying to edit How We Fall Apart, my YA. So it was just like, for a while, it was just me like bouncing between, you know, two different worlds almost. And then I ended up like leaving that job early just because it was like really toxic and the hours were like, I mean, quite frankly, they weren't manageable. Like even if I didn't have a whole separate writing career, like I was in the office till midnight some days. And I realized like I had sort of hit like a fork in the road. Like, yes, I could keep doing like, you know, the good Asian daughter thing and keep working at this like really prestigious accounting firm. Or I can like, you know, I didn't really have a choice. I felt like, because I was like, well, writing is what I love and I already have book deals. So like, I don't understand why I would like, you know, keep forcing myself to like try to do two careers when clearly I didn't care about one of them. So I ended up leaving that job. And then that was also when I decided to move to New York because I was like, well, I'm quitting my job, so I might as well just do another crazy thing too and move to New York City. So I moved, and then I actually ended up getting a full-time job in New York, but it was like way more chill. It was still in accounting. And then I worked there for a year while like launching the Dragon Warrior and everything. So that my whole debut year, I was still pretty busy. But then at the beginning of this year, I ended up losing that job. But it was kind of a blessing in disguise because, like, you know, just a couple months later, I realized, you know, I kind of have to get out of the city now because we're in a pandemic. And also, like, maybe this is time for me to just fully invest in my writing. So that's what I've been doing since then, just full-time writing.
Wow, that's a lot of, like, important life milestones. Like, I'm so impressed that you were able to juggle that many responsibilities while you were writing. So I really love the dedication in The Dragon Warrior. I'm going to read it for those who, you know, have never seen the book. For immigrants, children of immigrants, and diaspora readers everywhere, never forget that you are the heroes and dragon warriors of your own story. And I think that's such a lovely dedication. We often say on this podcast how we wish we had these books when we were younger and how being represented on page really matters and make a difference for young readers. So I'm just curious, did writing The Dragon Warrior and Fallen Hero help you, I guess, like, come to accept your identity more? Because, you know, like I said, we always wish we had these books when we were younger.
This is such a lovely question. Yes, absolutely. I like to say that while I was, you know, writing The Dragon Warrior, not only was I discovering the heart of the story, but I was also discovering things about myself. And I think any writer will tell you that when we set out to write a story, like, we're trying to impart a message on the world, but also, like, usually we're grappling with something inside ourselves that, you know, like, we want to resolve on the page. So for me, The Dragon Warrior really is a love letter to my childhood. It's a combination of Percy Jackson, which was one of my favorite childhood series, and the classic Chinese cartoon Journey to the West. And those were, like, you know, two wonderful, funny, like, fantastical stories that I grew up with. But I never really saw, like, an intersection of those kinds of stories. And so I wanted The Dragon Warrior to be, like, that intersection. And it's also, you know, it's really a story about a girl who feels like she doesn't have a place in the world. And I think that's something that a lot of children of immigrants will feel, because we're sort of uprooted from our home countries. And I think there's part of us that's always, like, yearning to go back and learn more about our culture, especially as we get older and realize, like there's, like, a sense of loss when you realize that your grasp on the language isn't as good anymore, or, like, maybe you never even learned the language. And I've certainly felt that as I've grown older, that I wish more and more that, you know, even though I did go to Chinese school, I had, like, taken my class more seriously. And so The Dragon Warrior is really just, you know, an attempt for me to, like, sort of bridge, like, the cultural gaps that were present in my childhood. And, you know, another thing that's present in The Dragon Warrior is, like, the settings of Chinatowns. So the reason that I put those settings in there specifically was because when I was younger, like, my family would go on road trips a lot, and we would, like, you know, try to go to a Chinatown. Like, we've been to Manhattan's Chinatown. We've been to San Francisco's Chinatown. We've been to Chicago's Chinatown. And I'm sure, like, there are a few more in there. But you get the point. So, like, every new place that we would go to, we would, like, want to try to find a Chinatown. And so that was something that I wanted to be in this novel, because I think Chinatowns are really special in that they fuse Chinese culture with, like, influences of American culture, because there's, like, you know, we can sort of see, like, how they're a little bit Americanized. And, you know, a lot of Chinese Americans grow up there. So I thought it'd be really cool to have a protagonist who has to go on a quest that takes her through Chinatowns. It's really, you know, it's a really a way of exploring, you know, identity that was a journey that I also went through when I was younger. And now that I'm older, I'm, like, reflecting back on that and writing a story that hopefully young diaspora readers also love to read.
I really like the premise of, like, with The Dragon Warrior, you have, like, an Asian, a multiracial Asian girl who is the chosen one. But in The Fallen Hero, the sequel, you kind of bring up the question of, you were the chosen one, but you aren't the chosen one anymore. How has the definition of hero changed from book one to book two, just out of curiosity?
This is such a great question. Oh my, all your questions are so great. So in The Dragon Warrior, I wanted specifically to use the chosen one trope because, yes, it's a trope, but it's, like, a trope that, you know, children of color haven't seen themselves in. And so I really wanted to, like, have a Chinese diaspora protagonist who is the one who is supposed to be the hero in the story, and she's the one who has to take on a quest, and the gods have, you know, chosen her. And then in The Fallen Hero, she's fallen from that role. And that's one of the reasons why it's called The Fallen Hero. And I guess this is a spoiler for the Dragon Warrior, but like the role falls to like her brother, right? And now Farron is like questioning, like, who am I now that I'm not, you know, now that like I've seen like this role that the gods wanted to give me and said, I don't like what you're doing and I want to stay true to myself and do what I think is right. So that's what The Fallen Hero explores. And, you know, as much as The Dragon Warrior is a story about a girl who's like trying to find her place in the world and reclaim these parts of her identity and become proud of who she is and like live up to these gods, The Fallen Hero is a story about when authority figures, you know, are like not doing great things, basically, like like when a hero realizes that, you know, she no longer agrees with the vision of these authority figures, like what does she do and how does she respond to that? So The Fallen Hero is really about Farron like discovering like what she holds, you know, as very valuable to herself and learning that she can sort of find her own way and choose the path that's right for her and just stay true to her heart.
I feel like that's such an Asian thing, you know, like how like with authority, we're taught at a very young age that we have to respect them and they know like the best for us. Keep your head down and just listen. And, you know, when you get older, when you go through your own life experiences, it's like, no, I have to stay true to myself. I have to accept who I am in order to like become the hero that I think that I deserve to be. So I really, really like the theme that you chose. I'm not Chinese American, but Marvin is. So I'm not really familiar with Chinese folklore. But I do know that you have the Monkey King as one of the figures in your story, but that's like a character that shows up a lot in pop culture, right?
Yeah, I mean, so you have a lot of characters pulled from Chinese mythology and folklore, like Sun Wukong, Naza, Guan Husa, and a lot of like for me recognizable figures because I am Chinese, and the characters that you reference and pull from like the pantheon is actually really varied and come from a lot of different legends. How much research did you do into Chinese folklore? Was this something you always had in your mind or something that you followed?
So I feel like was like not realizing when I was younger, but I was kind of researching for this book just because like I was so fascinated by Journey to the West. And like, I mean, when I was younger, like, you know, there wasn't all this fancy technology. There's no TikTok or Instagram.
Back in my day.
And like, honestly, my parents were like very far behind in technology and like what they would give to my sister and me. So we didn't have much to do except like sit around rereading the same books and rewatching the same movies and shows. So we ended up rewatching Journey to the West like so many times. But I loved it. Like I still love that cartoon series. When I was writing The Dragon Warrior, I rewatched it and I totally counted that as part of my research. And when I was in college, I took a Chinese studies class where like we read parts of like the actual text, one of the translated versions. So I got like a little more, a little bit more of like the not watered down, like the adult version of it, I guess. But yeah, I also read like Chinese mythology from A to Z, which was a guidebook that was translated into English. But like for me as a diaspora writer, like I always like worry that no amount of research I do is enough because, you know, although I do like know I can read some Chinese characters, like my vocabulary is like it's shrunk so much since I stopped taking like Chinese school. Like basically after I passed AP Chinese, I was like, done with that. Never gonna, you know, try to like read all these texts again. And so like for me, like if I try to sit down and like read texts that are in Chinese, like it would just like it would take forever and ever. So I did the best I could with like primary source materials from my college, with, you know, the cartoon series, and just with like mythology that I would like research on the web. But honestly, like my hope is that, you know, with the Dragon Warrior series, like the mythology that I've presented here is like just one person's interpretation based off my own experience and the limitations that come with that. And Chinese mythology is just, it's so vast, in the pantheon of gods, you know, all the deities and demons and legends and folklore, like the interpretations will differ between Confucianism, Taoism, Buddhism, and it's just way too much, you know, to like try to like cram it all into one middle grade fantasy novel. So my hope is that, like, you know, readers who love this series will be interested in Watch Journey to the West and then do some of their own research. And hopefully publishers will see, you know, people are interested in Chinese mythology-based stories and buy more from other writers who might know, like, more than me or have different interpretations.
Yeah, I mean, I really love your characterizations of all the characters, like Naza being kind of like a haughty, like, Bishonen boy, and, like, Sun Wukong being a dick. I thought it was a really, like, for someone who is at least marginally familiar with these myths, it was really fun to read, and I think you did a really good job characterizing the vast number of deities, not even just the gods, but also the dragons and the spirits and the whole, you know, how Chinese people have, like, apotheosis, like we make our ancestors our gods, right? We pray, yes, to them, we worship them.
Yes.
And that's also portrayed in your book too. And we talked to a lot of authors who write fantasy about, like, their, how they come up with their magical systems, and I think the system that you came up with revolving around Chinese folklore was really well done.
Thank you. Well, first of all, hearing Noja called, what did you say, Bishonen Hottie, just made my whole year. I've never heard that description before, but now, yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad that you liked, like, my interpretation of the gods. Like, I really just wanted to make all these figures, like, palatable to a younger audience, like, sort of in the vein of Percy Jackson. Like, I wanted to give them all, like, unique and quirky personalities. Like, you know, like, I mean, Sun Wukong was, like, really arrogant and super fun to write. But then you have, like, Guan Yin, who's, like, seen as, like, a motherly figure. So, yeah, I really just wanted to combine, you know, the Chinese mythology with the fun and fantastical, like, quirky interpretations of gods that's seen in Percy Jackson.
Yeah, I really like the fact that it is Chinese mythology, because I feel like growing up, it's always been Western mythology, always adaptations of Greek mythology. And it's just nice that there is another option now.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts of the second book, The Fallen Hero, was when you portrayed Panda Express as the literal gates to hell.
Thank you.
not P.F. Chang's. Really?
I did enjoy all the subtle call-outs to, you know, Asian American culture, you know, having Asian snacks, and it was cool to see something that invoked the culture that we grew up in.
I'm so glad. Yeah, I really just, when I wrote this, I was like, well, what would childhood me have taken on a quest? I was like, I would have taken Pocky, or, like, you know, like, white rabbit candies, or, like, Hawthorne flakes, just, like, the little snacks that I grew up eating. Yeah.
Yeah.
You said, like, when you were researching, you were just like, I hope that you got it, like, accurate. Like, that's what you said earlier. And I think that is, like, a common anxiety that a lot of own voices authors have. So, like, when your book, when Dragon Warrior released, were you really nervous about what Asian readers would think about it and if they thought it would be accurate?
I mean, yeah, like, when it, in the lead up to release, when it released, and, you know, even now, I feel like I've lived with, like, the anxiety of, you know, trying to be accurate to the mythology for so long now that, like, it's just, like, part of my life. But not to say that, like, it's, like, a bad thing, but it's just, you know, I feel like a lot of own voices writers do talk a lot about how, you know, like, we're trying to be accurate to whatever culture we're writing. But the one thing that I've told myself that I think has helped alleviate some of that pressure is that this book isn't for Chinese audiences. It's for a Chinese, I mean, it's mostly for like Chinese or Asian American readers. And ultimately, the heart of the story isn't about the Chinese mythology or like the accuracy of the pantheon that I portrayed. It's really just the heart of the story is about a girl who grows up in a society where she's Chinese and American, and she also has like other roots, and she's trying to combine them all together and figure out who she is. And I think that's something that most diaspora readers do connect with. I certainly felt like this weird sense of not belonging to either culture growing up. And so I think like I've done the best that I can and made this the story that's true to me. And obviously, you know, people are now free to read The Dragon Warrior, and you know, some of them might find mistakes in the story. I'm sure there are mistakes. They'll probably find mistakes and say, oh, hey, this isn't accurate, but maybe that'll inspire them to say, like, you know, I don't necessarily agree with the mythology in the story, but if she can write a Chinese mythology story, then I should be able to write one too. And that will encourage them to write their own stories. And hopefully there will be a lot of different Chinese mythology or just Chinese stories out there with all kinds of interpretations from different diaspora writers.
Yeah, I mean, there's more now, like F.C. Yee's Epic Crush of Jeannie Lo. You have The 12 by Cindy Lin, right? Hold on, let me... Yeah, you also have The 12 by Cindy Lin. So yeah, there are more Chinese folklore mythology-inspired books out there. So if readers complain that you got it wrong... there are others. There, like, I mean, it's not,
there are
it's
so
not
many
just like
interpretations of, like, you said, Greek mythology and, like,
yeah, exactly,
like Viking mythology. That, like, why not us too? Why not us?
I feel like we're just extra hard on ourselves because we're Asian, so that's like what we do. but yeah, honestly, I've just told myself, like, write with the confidence of a white writer and just like keep writing like what you want to write, the stories that you wanted the most. And I think that's the most important thing, is that for diaspora writers to remember that, like, I mean, ultimately their writing is for them. So as long as like they're not being like super problematic or harmful and like being careful, which I'm sure they are, then like, you know, it's really out of their hands after that. And I think just being able to put out the stories of their heart is a reward in itself.
So both The Dragon Warrior and Fallen Hero are middle grade adventure novels. But one thing I noticed while reading it is I don't remember reading adventure novels in middle school that got... It gets kind of dark at some points. There's actually characters that die.
Spoiler warning. So,
was this... when you first wrote this for NaNoWriMo, was this going to be a middle grade? Or when did it become a middle grade novel?
Yeah, so another great question. No, The Dragon Warrior was not middle grade at first. It was young adult, because before The Dragon Warrior, I had only ever written young adult. And I honestly, I think I knew of middle grade, but it was sort of like off my radar because I was kind of far removed from like the middle grade age or readership at that point. And I was like, oh, I don't think I can write middle grade. You know, like I don't think I could like have the voice or like recall what it's like to be that young. But then when I sent The Dragon Warrior to my critique partners, almost every single one of them told me, you wrote a middle grade. And when I like sort of stepped back and examined it, I realized like the themes of the story and ultimately, you know, the arc of discovering your place in the world are more true to middle grade. And the quest narrative makes more sense for a middle grade novel, as well as the humor that I wanted to put in the story like works better for middle grade. And I think young adult tends to take itself a little more seriously. So the wisecracks that Farron and other warriors make along the journey wouldn't fly so well in young adult. But I would say The Dragon Warrior does get kind of dark at times. And I think, you know, that was one of the reasons why when I queried agents, or when my agent and I took the book out on submission, like we would get rejections from industry professionals who would say, you know, like there's a lot of good stuff here, but I don't think you know, this doesn't quite feel like middle grade to me. And honestly, I think that's why, like, they never said specifically, but I honestly do feel like there is a readership for middle grade novels that are darker. And it's been a while since, like, I was, like, you know, that target readership. But I think I do remember, like, sometimes I would, like, pick up a middle grade novel and it would be, like, the themes would be a little bit heavier. And I think those kinds of stories are also important for kids, because, like, a lot of kids do go through dark things. They go through grief, you know, like, loved ones who die early on, or struggle with a lot of other problems that, you know, like, even though they're a kid, like, because they're a kid, they shouldn't, like, have to deal with those problems, but they are. And so I think, like, having novels that engage with those darker themes is important for them to realize that they're not alone. I think there's a lot of comfort in picking up a book and, you know, reading a story where something happens and you see that your own, like, darker, unfortunate experience is reflected in that, and realizing, oh, I'm not alone. This is how this character got past this obstacle. Maybe I can do something similar. I think there's a lot of value in that for middle grade readers.
Yeah. I mean, as a full-fledged adult reading your book, I was riveted and also very sad at the sad parts. So aww. I think you did a really good job. You said you're working on your YA now. Can you tell us a little bit more about that project?
Yes, I can. So my young adult debut is a thriller with an Asian American cast. It's called How We Fall Apart. And it's pitched as One of Us is Lying meets Crazy Rich Asians. And it's a story that's set against the backdrop of Manhattan's elite. And it's about these five Asian American students who are top students at an elite prep school. And then at the beginning of the book, it's revealed that one of them, who was, like, sort of like the queen bee, very top student in the school, dies. And the other four characters, who were, like, sort of part of her friend group, but, you know, also very competitive with each other, start to become pinned as, like, the main suspects. And it's really, you know, when I wrote this novel, I really just wanted to, like, have an open conversation about, you know, the very, I think, toxic competitive environments that we see in high schools in America today, and especially among Asian kids, children of immigrants, kids who feel like this immense amount of pressure to live up to their parents and society's expectations. Because I think, like, we do see this a lot with Asian kids, especially, whose parents, you know, are, like, have, like, pretty rigid, strict expectations of them. And their expectations are get, like, full score in the SATs, go to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Stanford, all these top schools. And, you know, what happens to the kids who don't live up to those standards? Because Asian Americans are not a monolith, and we're not all, like, super smart. A lot of us are creatives, for example. And, like, you can't really, like, shove all these kids in a box and tell them, you know, you have to, like, be this certain way, because what if they can't, then what happens? And so How We Fall Apart is, like, it really just took me into a deep dive of my own high school days and how much pressure I put on myself to, like, live up to my parents' expectations, but also just to, like, society standards. Because when I was in high school, I feel like there was so limited representation for Asian Americans. And what I saw was just, like, top students, like, the, you know, the Asian kid on screen was, like, the nerd, the person who went to Stanford, got, like, perfect test scores and everything. And I feel like if that's, like, the only message that you're giving to Asian kids, then they're going to look at themselves, like, if they fail a test, for example, and say, like, what's wrong with me? Like, why can't I, like, fit this standard that it seems like every other Asian kid is able to do? So, yeah, I just wanted to talk about that. And as well, there's, like, a little bit of an exploration into mental health, because that's not something that really exists in Asian communities. I know in my own family, like, my parents, like, kind of dismissed the idea of, like, mental illnesses. Like, Like, to them, like, stuff like that just doesn't exist. Like, therapy isn't a thing that we should be doing. And, like, you know, if you're not able to, like, for example, if you, like, aren't able to, like, meet a deadline or something, or, like, you fail a test, it just means you're not working hard enough. It's not that, like, maybe, you know, you're not in the right mental place to be able to, like, do all that and meet all their standards. So I feel like in Asian communities, it's, like, really important that we acknowledge that mental health issues are a thing and get the appropriate therapy for that, because otherwise you just have, like, a lot of people who, you know, are forcing themselves into, like, these boxes to live up to society's expectations. And then on top of that, like therapy and also isn't a thing. So then what do you do when you're kind of, like, freaking out that you can't, like, meet these standards?
This definitely sounds like my book. And oh my gosh. I just got flashbacks of high school as an underachieving Asian, and also as someone who, you know, had mental health, like, mental illness from a very young age. Yeah, like, this definitely sounds like my book. Katie, thank you so much for speaking with us. Where can our listeners follow you?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at KTZHAO author. And I also just started a YouTube channel. It's called Katie's Corner. And all of my, like, links and all my social media is just, like, it's linked on my Twitter and Instagram bio. So you can find me there. And my website is katiezhao.com.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Katie, for joining us on Books and Boba. It was a blast talking to you. And yeah, good luck on your next book.
Thank you so much.
And that was our interview with Katie Zhao. Her books, The Dragon Warrior, Fallen Hero, are now available at booksellers everywhere, including our bookshop.org page.
Oh yeah, we have a bookstore now online that you can support us. So if you're looking for recommended reads, definitely check it out. A portion of your purchases goes towards supporting this podcast. That's a labor of love between me and Mira, so we really, really appreciate it.
And it also goes to independent bookstores everywhere. So support your local bookstores as well.
Yeah. As a quick reminder, Mira, what are we reading for the month of October?
We are reading Confessions by Kanae Minato. I picked this book because it's October, Spooktober. So we are reading a thriller horror novel.
Yes, a fine way to ring in the spooky month and to take our minds off of whatever political reality our country finds ourselves in.
You know, I find murder mystery to be very relaxing. I watch a lot of crime documentaries because that is just the way I relax. So,
yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Books and Boba. Thank you to Katie for a great conversation. And yeah, with that, we'll see you next time on Books and Boba.
All right. Stay safe, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
But we're still here and we're going strong.
It's an exciting time in Asian America. There are more movies, TV shows, books, and music reflecting us than ever. But all of these represent just a small slice of Asian American culture and experiences. So what do? Tell more slices. Asian Americana is a show that explores these slices of distinctly Asian American culture and history. We've talked about how Chinese Americans built California's Sacramento Delta, the art scene turns gallery institution Giant Robot, a play that explores the lost Cambodian pop music of the 60s and 70s, and, of course, Boba, just to name a few stories. You can find Asian Americana at asianamericana.com or on your podcast app.